Hello, it's Friday, and that means it's another edition, wow, number 16 of the Zogby Report, Real and Unscripted, where every week my son Jeremy and my business partner as well and I take a look at the news of the week and pick out some topics that really strike us as vital to talk about. How you doing this week, Jer?
I'm doing well. How about you?
I'm doing okay. You know, we're safe. No, you're safe because we talk three times a day. And I hope everybody out there listening is staying safe and healthy and listening to the medical professionals. But I know that you want to talk a bit about Full Circle and the coronavirus. And so let's hear for the first time what you have to say.
Thank you. And I want to get right into the fact that we've been covering what's going on in 2020 for 16 weeks now. And I want to remind everybody, especially our listeners that go back to the very first podcast, that we don't lose sight of what we think about, what we read about, and what we talk about. So for those who have been with us all along, or those who've gone back in the library and have listened to the podcast, they recall that we opened up this podcast, the Zogby Report, Real and Unscripted, talking about 2020 as the year of the protest. And we weren't wrong about that. Recall that going back to January, from Hong Kong to Beirut to Paris to Santiago and everywhere in between, people were demonstrating out in the capitals, out in other cities, basically a unifying theme of against corruption, against the administrations and authorities that they felt were not really helping their cause. You had baby boomers and older folks out on the streets. They were nervous about pensions, whether they were going to even be able to put food on the table. You had Gen Z and millennials who were out in the streets who were saying, when are we going to have, you know, our first chance in life, our beginning of our careers and prospects for a future? And so everybody, I can't say everybody, a lot of people were out on the streets, and then the coronavirus came, and now billions of people are locked indoors. And so what we're starting to see, and we talked about this last week, are that there are a group of people in the United States, I'm not aware of elsewhere yet around the world, although probably, where they're getting tired of the lockdowns, and they're getting tired of being cooped up, and the anger is starting to boil. So that's one way in which I see our reporting having come full circle. The other way, the other instance in this theme of being full circle, is it was either our second or our third podcast that we covered the assassination of the Iranian general by President Trump and the prospects for major war. Of course, with the coronavirus, all of that disappeared. It dissipated. People stopped paying attention. There was, you know, here and there, there was some coverage about tensions between Iran, but nothing that really made the headlines until earlier this week. The rhetoric started to blow up with the U.S. Navy and the Iranian naval officers both threatening each other that if the boats come near each other, they're going to blow each other up. So here we are again, back to, you know, what we were talking about 12, 13, 14 weeks ago, and the rhetoric is flaring up again. So all of this in 16 weeks, a cycle, we've come full circle. And I just wanted to point out to everybody that we've never lost sight of that. But Dad, you recently did a talk with the World Affairs Council, and you outlined a number of themes for the 2020 election. So why don't you take us through those and then see where all of this overlaps with what I've talked about, and let's dissect it.
Sure. And thanks for that analysis and reminding us that there are other things going on in the world, and certainly hot spots, you know, beyond the coronavirus, which has really just usurped so much of our lives and attention. So if we just look at the 2020 campaign, there are issues and there are personalities and there are demographics, but I tried to look at it from the point of view of what are the overarching themes that will help us understand what's going to take place between now and Election Day. These are in no special order, and I'm going to do them very briefly. The first theme that I identified is science versus skepticism. Those seem to be two co-equal parts of our electorate. As for science, we have not only the ongoing battle over climate change and the need to act to attack climate change, something, of course, that in particular is of interest and drives motivation of younger voters. But we also have, obviously, the issue of COVID-19. And who to believe? The president holds daily news conferences along with his leading scientists in the world of disease and immunization. And yet there's still, while a majority identify with the scientists on the panel and are willing to listen to the scientists, on the other hand, there is some serious skepticism about any elites and any science, particularly if that science is seen as not in my self-interest, preventing me from putting food on the table and getting a job. Science versus skepticism is much, much larger than just the question of climate change. It's who do you believe, who can I trust? The second overriding theme is empathy versus rage. The president was able to ride a crest of rage in 2016, kind of a rage against the elite, the establishment, portrayed as Hillary Clinton, portrayed as the Democratic Party, and to go directly to a core of voters and expand it. Voters that had gone back to Pat Buchanan in the early 90s, of course, to Ross Perot, folks that were really raging against the machine and who had been victims of structural changes in our economy, versus not simply a sense of being able on the part of politicians to feel, to understand the pain that people are going through, but also just that simple notion of empathy, which appears to be lacking in this administration. Presidents out there every day, in many ways doing a lot of the right things, and yet is appearing to not really understand the pain and suffering that people are going through. That's going to be a theme because that's going to be something that Joe Biden is going to portray himself, an empathetic character and one who has persisted in the face of some tragedy. The third, and these are, you know, somewhat interrelated, is stability versus disruption. No question about the fact that voters voted for disruption. Again, it was anti-elite in 2016. And the president has made good on his promises. He's turned both the Democratic Party and Republican Party elites upside down, not only in terms of policies and executive orders, but also in terms of really grabbing control of that conservative base of the Republican Party and of issuing executive orders and challenging the way that presidents normally behave. Will voters want to continue their rage against the machine and continue with disruption, or are voters this year going to be looking for some kind of calming down, some kind of stability, some sort of sense someone's in charge, and here is the a coherent message. We'll have to wait and see. Number four is healthcare. Does it expand or does it contract? That is a major theme. It was a major theme in the Democratic primaries. Was it Medicare for all or a public option to expand Obamacare? But it's going to run headlong into both the president and vice president and Republican Party that do not see health insurance and expanding health insurance as an entitlement. That's going to be a battle royal. And then lastly, and this is one that I've added just in the last week, the fifth theme, the New Deal versus the New Deal Plus. As I've mentioned before in this podcast and elsewhere, there has been no lack of spending on the part of this administration. It's heading towards $6 trillion and probably $3 or $4 trillion more of spending. How that debt is ever going to be repaid is anybody's question, but arguably nothing else could be done. In order for Democrats to challenge the president, they're going to have to go beyond the president's New Deal to a New Deal Plus. And are voters going to be ready for that sort of action? These, again, aside from personalities and aside from jobs, and not only, hey, are people going to not only go back to work, what are they going to go back to work to? We're seeing, as we've mentioned before, an acceleration of artificial intelligence, an acceleration of technology and robotics. Just where are people going to work? What are they going to do? How are they going to be paid? But those are the overriding themes as I see it. What do you think?
Wonderfully put. And, you know, like you, it's no surprise that I'm a patterns guy. So I've been taking notes here because I didn't hear this address at the World Affairs Council. And so I'm writing them out and I'm noticing a pattern, or I was as I was writing them out. And just quickly, science versus skepticism, empathy versus rage, stability versus disruption, healthcare expansion versus contraction, New Deal versus New Deal Plus. I can at least say for the first four, here is the interesting pattern. In the order that you laid them out, the science versus the skepticism, it's like, you know, basically our division in our country, the Democrats versus the Republican, kind of unfortunately how we've been divided going back to at least 2000, almost 50-50 down the middle with an exception or two in the middle, but or in between, but never really completely going away. The empathy versus the rage, you know, that's Biden versus Trump. That's going to play out as a 50-50 or something like that split down the middle. Stability versus disruption, probably going to be Biden's platform, the stability, Trump representing the disruption, and then healthcare expansion or contraction, the expansion being Biden's platform, contraction likely possibly to be Trump. So what I think of automatically is, obviously, we're still divided. We're going to continue to be divided. And these themes glaringly scream to the country, we are divided. And so I think the one that's not really clear is the New Deal versus the New Deal Plus. And the way I frame that is, who is going to outstimulate the other candidate? that's going to be a question or a battle of the ages. The debates after, well, if they even hold these conventions, maybe they'll be held virtually. But that's a fascinating analysis. But I can't help but think that it just shows our incredibly divisive political landscape.
So let me ask you a question on that last one. you know, the New Deal versus the New Deal plus. Is there going to be a candidate, either of the two, who stands up there and says, we've got to rein in federal spending? We've got to be aware of this accumulating debt, upwards of $25 trillion and growing. We've got to begin to look at addressing the deficits that we're creating. Do you sense that's going to even be on the agenda? Or is it going to be spending versus more spending?
I would say the latter, because although, yeah, when you get into a situation of over $20 trillion in debt, and you already said this, how do you begin to pay that off? It's not going to be paid off. And by the way, some people might be familiar with a historian economist by the name of Michael Hudson, who has written a book called "And You Shall or Forgive Them Their Debts," and it's about the ancient world, where, you know, going back to the ancient Egyptians, the Babylonians, you know, the Assyrians, it wasn't uncommon when a king or a new dynasty was being formed that the king came in and cleared the debts of the people, because it was a way of washing the animosity of the society away and reintroducing order and taking it back away, the power from the creditors or the banksters, as we call them in the 21st century, or as they've also been called, the money changers. And so that hasn't happened, to my knowledge, in centuries, if not millennia. So that's not going to happen today. There isn't going to be a debt jubilee. So to answer your question, for any candidate to talk about contracting the money supply and raising interest rates is political suicide. I do believe in economically, it's going to eventually have to happen, but it's going to happen on its own when things spiral out of control, as they tend to do for every economy that gets itself in this situation. But for a candidate to go on and say, look, I'm going to be the guy or the lady to turn off the faucet, is basically putting yourself in a position to be defeated. So whether they want to or they don't want to, they are forced to keep the faucet running. And so what I see playing out is just Trump will have his vision of what the New Deal Plus is, and Biden will have his vision of what the New Deal Plus will be. It'll just be in different ways.
Yeah, and that's how I see it as well. And I don't see any chance that anybody's going to stand up there and address the deficit, especially since, you know, obviously this is not over. The virus itself is not over, but the acceleration into the next economy is just getting started. You know, the trends economically that we've been seeing over the last decade or so, the technological changes, only get accelerated during a time like this. So there are millions of people who are just not going to go back to their old jobs. And we all know that the creativity and the resilience of inventors and investors are going to be able to fill in that gap. It's just that they're not going to be able to fill in that jobs gap in months or even a couple of years. So we're talking about serious, continued, and growing dislocation over the next few years. And we're talking about an expansion of human suffering in this country. But then also what I'm reading is how much worse it's going to be in developing countries. And we've just spent the last two decades in this world doing the unthinkable, which is actually making serious strides against poverty and against hunger. And we're beginning to see those tremendous strides being chipped away at as tens of millions of people slide right back into poverty and near starvation. This is massive. This is just massive. And from the point of view, I'm not a conservative and I'm not an economist, but from the point of view of a conservative economist, what's going to be the value of money? You know, we're spending trillions. I remember as a young man, the minority leader in the U.S. Senate was a fellow by the name of Everett Dirksen, from Illinois, battling with Lyndon Johnson over the Great Society. Dirksen, of course, was a Republican, and Dirksen saying, "All I hear are billions here, billions there. When you add up all these billions, you get into some real money, don't you?" Now we're talking about trillions, which is something you can't even count.
And then some say there are the quadrillions of derivatives. that key question: what is the value of money? And you know, I always go back to Aristotle, who said that the five elements of money are portability, durability, fungibility meaning interchangeable, all over the place, and then there's also a divisibility. And then, but the most important one, because I mean, all currencies have those four that I said, but the key one is store of value. And mm-hmm. how long will, you know, the dollar, the pound, the euro, whatever it is, the yen, how long will they continue to maintain that store of value? I believe that the optimistic and hopeful outlook to all of this is where we have a scenario of competing currencies, where mm-hmm. it's not just the government ordered currency that is only viewed and determined as money, or the national bonds that are seen as the instruments or vehicles to wealth and preservation. But when we have this situation where maybe people lose faith in their ability to save and hold money, that we have cryptocurrencies that are exploding on the scene and have a lot of those elements that I just outlined. Of course, it's still the question, does Bitcoin have a store of value? We saw it go up. I think it went up at its high, maybe to 17,000. It came back down to, 6,000. It's only been around since 2013. Of course, there are dozens of other cryptocurrencies, but that's probably the beginning of this notion of competing forms of money, especially with a new generation who are digital and desire to be mobile. Bitcoin and desire privacy and anonymity, Bitcoin and those kinds of instruments provide just that. I'll say one more thing about being hopeful, because we're talking about some pretty heavy stuff here, but even when there are crises, there are still opportunities for innovation. There are mm-hmm. still opportunities to, I guess, profit. And although I'm not by any means an investor, I was talking with my friend yesterday who said he kicks himself because, he foresaw Blockbuster. And, remember when we were, entertaining ourselves with DVDs and going to the rental stores, he said, this thing Netflix was coming on the scene. And he just, he saw the transition to as a digital platform, and Blockbuster was clearly becoming a dinosaur. And he said, by the time it transitioned to the digital platform, it was something like 15 or 20 bucks a share. And had he only just put down $1,000, today he'd have nearly $500,000. And so it's just like we kick ourselves when we see those previous opportunities. But I said to him, you have to be able to identify what is the dinosaur. What's the species that's going in extinction or facing extinction? What's the new species that's going to arrive on the scene? And then the third prediction, probably the hardest one, is what are the features of this new species that the public are going to want to gravitate towards? Well, that's food for thought. If I'm going to try and look for that, it's not easy, but that gives me hope.
And this gives me hope. First of all, my kid is quoting Aristotle, and that is interesting to me. Let's make a note, even though we are real and unscripted, let's try to think next week about solutions and some reasons for optimism and do a segment on that. Here's a time where, as we're closing, I'd like to again thank our excellent producer, Ryan Miller, who just puts this together seamlessly for us every week. And then I'd like to ask those who are listening to please write to us. Some of you do already, but please post any of your comments or any questions that you have. Please share this. Let's expand the base. Feel free to share it to as many people as possible and suggest that they subscribe. And on my part, I'm signing off and thanking you again for your support. And Jer, we'll talk to you soon.
Talk to you soon. Take care.